WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Here on 95.9 WATD, coming to you live from Broadcast House. And what we do here is we talk. We have a variety of conversations. It isn't just one 2-hour long segment about the same topic and mashed up. We try to have different voices from various communities, officials from different levels of government, whether it's municipalities, the county, the state. And from time to time, we'll throw in a fun guest here and there or an interesting topic. If it's a timely topic, well, then we'll get an expert to talk a little bit about it, or maybe we'll have book authors. But we are here tonight to, I guess, celebrate the end of January. I can't believe that it's already the end of January. It was just Christmas. Like, I feel like it was just a couple of days ago. Of course, my first guest is already here. Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald is here. He'll be the first one up. How are you, Sheriff?
I am good, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm just doing fantastic. It's always good to have you in and chat about what's going on down at the department.
Yeah, it's been a while, and it's great to see you. I was thrilled when I saw that I was coming in, and we do have a lot to talk about. It's been a while since I've seen you, and a lot has changed, but a lot remains the same. You know, after this last election cycle. Strangely enough, I find myself the senior sheriff in the Commonwealth.
How's that feel?
It makes me feel old. But all kidding aside, I'm looking forward to. We have two new sheriffs. There are 14 sheriffs in Massachusetts, and we've got two new ones. We have Paul Haru in Bristol County. He's the former mayor of Attleboro. And someone I had met when he was a state representative before he was the mayor, he came in and was going to be assisting us. He's actually had an interest in corrections and a background in corrections. He used to work for the Department of Corrections, and he was going to be helping us with some reentry stuff and calculating recidivism rates and things like that. So he's a numbers guy. He's a by-the-numbers guy. So it'll be great to work with him. I think I'm looking forward to that. And then Donna Buckley, who was the former general counsel in Barnstable County, is now the sheriff down there.
How things have changed.
Yes, indeed. Jim Cummings is retired, and I will miss him. Actually, I will miss both he and Sheriff Hodgson. You know, when I first got elected 18-plus years ago, those two gentlemen were on my first stops. You know, before I even assumed the office, I wanted to go and see how they ran their operations. And I learned a lot from both, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to stay in touch with both of them, and time goes on. But it's strange to think, you know, as I look around the room, I'm not the oldest guy in the room when the sheriffs get together, but I'm the senior sheriff. I'm the 18 years in office, so
you've gone from the pupil to the teacher,
yes,
so to speak. I mean, or maybe a mentor to some of the newer incoming sheriffs.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. We did last week. We had our first sheriff's meeting of the new year and of the new term, and I was asked, and you'll get a kick out of this, I was asked to, we had like a little introductory sheriff's academy for the two new sheriffs. You know, each of the sheriffs took a little piece of what their area of expertise was, and we spoke about that. So the Carrie Hill, the executive director of the Sheriff's Association, asked if I would do a little segment on the history of the Office of the Sheriff. And it was very well received, not just by our two new sheriffs, but the other ones came up and said that that was great. They'd like to hear more of that as time goes by. But it's amazing how many people are interested in that, you know, and I don't think anyone realized, you know, that the Office of Sheriff is, you know, outside of the monarchy, it's the oldest known governmental institution to the Western world. You know, think about that one for a minute.
It's the history guy and I'm coming out. It's oozing out. He's also one of my favorite history guys. So he's coming up in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned. That was just a little appetizer from the sheriff. As after we check traffic, we will have a full conversation with him. Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. She is the chairperson for the Hanson Select Board. We'll talk with her, get caught up with what's going on in her community. Chris Heffernan, a Wimmett Town counselor, at-large counselor, he'll be in studio. We'll chat with him about what's going on in his community and what's going on with the town council. And finally, Chris Carney, owner of Raynham Park, is going to be popping in to talk a little bit about what's going on at Raynham Park. Is it teaming up with Caesars Entertainment? Is he getting involved with the new sports betting? They're going to be building a new facility. We'll talk with him about that and more.
If this thing called civilization was going to end, I think it would have ceased during one of the two world wars. My grandparents never gave up. They worked and lived till the bitter end, which wasn't bitter at all. Actually, it was sweet. Their life was sweet. I want my life the same. I want to work, coach my kids' soccer team, go out to eat after, and then come home to my bed where I can rest my bones. Then get up and do it all again tomorrow. That's what I want. That's what I'm working for. And that is my American dream. I can't do it alone. I need you. We need each other. We're all in this together, and together we can have our American dreams. As long as we're willing to do what is necessary to survive on this marble called Earth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. And as we teased earlier, our first is Joe McDonald, Plymouth County Sheriff, reelected to another 6-year term. But it wasn't as though you didn't have opposition. How does that feel to know that some didn't want to step up and run against you?
Well, you know, it felt good at the time, and I still, you know, feel that I owe it to the voters to get out there, and I still did. You know,
you still did. You were out there campaigning.
And I just want, you know, we've got a great story to tell, and I think the fact that, you know, everything has worked out very, very well, that I think a lot of people are happy with what we're doing. And I have to say, you know, that's got more to do with the employees that work there than it does with me. Now, granted, I will be the one to set the tone, but we're very, very blessed here in Plymouth County. Our sheriff's office is amongst the best in the country. You know, I would suggest maybe even the best in the country. You know, sheriff's offices are different wherever you go nationally, but our origins are all the same, and our core mission, you know, our core mission is county-level corrections. Our jurisdiction, and a lot of people ask me questions, boy, are you guys a state agency? Are you a county agency? And the answer to the question is somewhat more difficult these days to answer. In 2010, many people say we became a state agency, but I hesitate to say that because the only thing that changed in 2010 was our funding mechanism. So rather than relying on this amalgam of multiple sources, the biggest of which was usually the county deeds excise. You know, if property values went up and they sold, we did well. If they went down and the market went down, we went down. But now we're line items in the state budget. So that's why you don't see those stories every year about shortfalls and how are we going to make this up or make that up. But, you know, the budget's always a challenge, but we justify it to the legislature. And, you know, our delegation has been great with us. They've got a great understanding of what it is that we do. And, you know, if they've got questions, they know to pick up the phone, give a call, and we'll get it answered.
But your department goes beyond just having control over the county jail. It's your partnerships with, you know, many municipalities and other offices in the county government, correct?
Yeah, that's true, Kevin, and I appreciate you asking the question in that way. There are so many things that the sheriff's office does. Now, the sheriffs in the Commonwealth, and I'm going to go back into my history mode for a minute, go back to 1692. And in many instances, I think a lot further than that. Here in Plymouth County, I'm going to suggest we go back to 1620 with Miles Standish, who was essentially the first Secretary of Homeland Security, right, in the New World. But in 1692, what is significant about that is when the Massachusetts Bay Colony merged with the Plymouth Colony. And then you saw the creation of really what had already existed, the sheriff's offices. You had the jails back then. Each county was required to have its own jail at its own expense. And it's interesting, if you read those old accounts, the primary source accounts, it's not spelled J-A-I-L, it's G-A-O-L. It's like, so the Gaol. But, and you had the Gaolers, the jailers, and that's essentially, you know, where it came from. But, you know, the office of sheriff is as you point out, much, much larger than simply the jail, the county jail. The sheriffs are, you know, at common law, the sheriffs are the keepers of the king's peace. And this goes back to medieval England, you know, 1,200 years ago. And that's one of the things I was teaching. I want the new sheriffs to understand that this is an ancient office. And our law enforcement authority comes from common law. I was talking to a reporter during the election cycle who was trying to write a story about the sheriffs, and they were having a difficult time because they couldn't find much in the statutes about the creation of the sheriff's office, like you would find, you know, an enabling or creating statute for this agency or that agency. And I said, well, that's where did you look? And he said, I looked in the statutes. I said, well, you got to go back a little further. He said, really, to where? I said, to the Constitution. He said, the U.S. Constitution? No, further than that. Go to the Massachusetts Constitution, right, of 1780. And read in there, and he says, oh, the sheriffs are created by that constitution. No, the sheriffs are mentioned because they'd already been around for several hundred years at that point. So that was interesting to him. I think it really kind of put it in perspective, you know, the ancient nature of the office. But over time, you know, the sheriffs were at one point in time the primary law enforcement. We've got here in Plymouth County, we've got very competent, very good police departments in all of our communities, which is great. Criminal justice reform is going to give us some challenges, I think, to keep everyone fully staffed and keep as many officers, as trained officers as we can out there on the street. So, you know, we're dedicated to that. That's a great partnership that we've had, providing deputy sheriff services to the communities. The SafeKey program, you know, where we will take into custody the arrests that may be held for some period of time until they can be arraigned. And, you know, that's a big service to the town, because every time a town would have to assign an officer or two to watch someone, that's two officers they can't put on the street, or they have to backfill with overtime. Plus, right, the fact our staff is more so trained in custody than our police are. So, you know, the training is a little bit different, but I think very, very relevant. And, you know, a lot of our corrections officers go on to jobs in police departments. And, you know, a lot of people say that must upset you because you spend a lot of money training them. And it really doesn't, because I think the training that they get in de-escalation and all of the things that they do dealing with a very, you know, challenging population, right?
Very valuable.
Absolutely, Kevin. And that's why in Massachusetts, I don't think you see the level of problems that you have in other places, like in Memphis, like we're seeing right now. And, you know, I'm apprehensive. I don't know what is going to happen now. Is this going to be, you know, the reform of the criminal justice reform? You know, are we going to get into multiple levels of that? You know, I think here in Massachusetts, we're a national model in many, many ways, not just in corrections, but I think in law enforcement in general. You know, we've done it very, very well.
But is this something that you feel that, you know, I know that Massachusetts and the legislature was proactive during the past legislative session, try to put measures in place Do you feel that this could go federal as to when it comes to policing?
Well, I certainly think there are federal guidelines. You know, civil rights violations, you hear when people talk about 1983 claims, those are federal civil rights violations. Oftentimes you have the Department of Justice that comes into those dysfunctional law enforcement agencies and puts them under a consent decree. So essentially they'd be receiving federal oversight of everything that they do. And in some instances, that may be appropriate. But, I'm happy to say that I can't think of anywhere here in the Commonwealth that we would need such extreme measures as that. I think we're a national model. The legislature, I think things moved a little more quickly than I would have liked to have seen. But I think the governor did a good job working with the legislators to temper the changes that they put into place. I think the way that they were implemented is problematic and continues to be problematic. I am in constant contact with most of our police chiefs. I go to the chiefs' meetings every month. And I just want those chiefs to understand that we're here for them as well. You know, whatever we can provide, I think we're going to be looking at perhaps doing a separate type of a training for deputy sheriffs, and we will provide those services, for the details, the traffic details, the security details, the things that the towns can use, but they just don't have the manpower to do. I'd like to, make that one of those partnerships that you referred to, that we will supplement those, will be a force multiplier, as the military would call it, for our local towns.
Before we look ahead and with the future, the year ahead and any plans that you and the department may have, can we take a look back at the year that was, some of your successes that the department had, that the Sheriff's Department has had, that you want to share with the listeners?
Well, I think the thing that really stands out is the way, and it's not just this past year, but let's say the past 3 years, because we lost a couple of years in the shuffle there with the pandemic and whatnot. But I was so pleased with the way that our staff, our security staff, our program staff, everybody stepped up. And the job that they did, I can't even begin to describe what a great job. You didn't hear of any fatalities, knock on the wood, in our correctional facility. You remember when the whole thing started? Everyone wanted all of the inmates released immediately because they characterized the sheriff's office, the correctional facilities themselves, as they are congregate living, absolutely, but they were characterizing us as landlocked cruise ships, and that the disease would run rampant through the facility and cause real problems. But to their credit, and I want to say not just our staff, but the Department of Public Health was so helpful to us during that period of time. Everything was good. I have to say that's probably the thing that I've been most impressed with over the last few years. This past year, challenges that have presented themselves, believe it or not, our populations of inmates have declined precipitously. We've been as high as 1,750 inmates. Today, as we sit here, we're around 550 inmates. And in some ways, that's a great thing because the population density is lower. It makes it easier to distance ourselves from people that might not be, well, that might have a cold or something like that. Thank God the COVID's not going around. But that presents other challenges. A lot of the inmates that used to come to us that could be classified to go out and work in the communities on our work crews and things like that, those individuals, by and large, are not coming to jail anymore. So they're a population we're doing without. So I had a nice visit today from Mayor Sullivan from Brockton. He brought over some of his upper-level staff members to do a quick tour of the jail to see some of the things that we're up to and to talk about some of those partnerships. The city of Brockton has been tremendous with us, and Mayor Sullivan, I have to say, helping us with our Corey-friendly job fairs. He's really been a big supporter of what it is we're up to. He's allowed us to put a reentry staff person in the mayor's office in the city of Brockton and City Hall. So those individuals that are leaving our custody can go and avail themselves of our services for the reentry issues, things like helping them get jobs, resume writing, maybe getting some education. It's really been wonderful, and I'm looking forward to, and I know the mayor and I had some peripheral conversations about that stuff today, and I'm looking forward to continuing those.
What does it mean to you to have an official like the mayor of Brockton, you know, the biggest community in Plymouth County, take time, come down, and meet with you and discuss the partnership?
That meant a lot to me, Kevin, I have to tell you. And I'd have always been welcomed in his office. You know, whenever I have ideas, he's certainly more than happy to hear those ideas out. And sometimes we will meet face-to-face, but I was very happy. Now, he'd been down to the correctional facility before, but what was nice about this one is he came specifically to see some of the new MOUD unit, which is another acronym. You know, we love those in the military and in law enforcement. MOUD is Medication for Opioid Use Disorder.
Oh.
So, and this is another big thing in helping to get people off of, you know, illicit drugs and hopefully save lives. But the mayor came over to see that. We gave him a good showing of that. We talked about some of the, now you can imagine, since a lot of the inmates that would be able to go out into the community don't come to us anymore, the county farm. That's now an issue. It's still, you know, we're going to keep that going as a resource because there are a few individuals, inmates, that can go over there and do that work. But I wanted, and I had talked to the mayor about this, about maybe getting together with the probation department, finding out if we could use this as a center for their community service stuff. Their community corrections is what they call it.
Sure.
And I think if we get together with that, and the mayor seemed very enthused about that because he's got a zillion projects in Brockton that we would love to help with, and I know he wants to help. So it's been good.
Let's pivot and talk a little bit about the MOUD center itself. When did this come into operation, and what do you foresee it as ultimately being?
Well, this is it's really new ground as far as I am concerned. You know, Massachusetts, we tend to, I joke about it, you know, we've got a very long and a very rich history here in the Commonwealth, and I love to talk about that. But in many ways, you know, we are very, very far ahead of the curve on a lot of these things. D.A. Cruz and I, you know, we have our the task force that we've set up that's teaming up with so many, you know, not just law enforcement, but the clergy, the educational people, it's the hospital folks. We've really done great with that. But what this is in corrections is now there is an acknowledgement of the fact that many, many people are going to present with us. And when you think about it, and I was looking at some of the stats, there's a lot of people that come to jail because of drugs or alcohol use, and many of them also have the coexisting diagnosis. They have some mental health issues as well, and it's incumbent upon us to see that they get appropriate treatment for those issues so that we can deal with those. And out on the street, a lot of these individuals, well, not a lot, I shouldn't say a lot. Statistically, I think it's not really that significant, but maybe we'll find as time goes by that it will be. But people that were on Suboxone or methadone in the community to help them deal with their opioid use disorder, when they would come into the jail and you know, begin to serve a sentence, that wasn't a possibility in jail. So in jail, there was a forced sobriety that people would get off that. Now, some people want that. They think this is a great opportunity to get clean, like completely clean, and not be on those things. However, there is a large number of individuals that really need that crutch. And I'm happy to report that we have a whole unit set up now, and it's funded by the Commonwealth. And we started out with a few of the sheriffs who were doing it, and you know, we found that there was a study out of Rhode Island that showed it was doing really great things, but the study group was very, very small. So I really don't, you know, unless that control group or the study is large enough, I'm not so sure that the data can be valid. But with all 14 sheriff's offices now, there were a few of us that were doing it. I know we took a little heat because some people were saying, well, how come they can't get it in Plymouth County, but they can get it in Norfolk County? Well, that wasn't really true. Anybody that really wanted it, all the sheriffs, we work very closely all the time. We meet monthly. We know each other. We're friendly. So that if an individual were to present in Plymouth County under the old system when we weren't funded for this, we would make arrangements to transfer that person to Norfolk County. And Sheriff McDermott up there would be very gracious. He would take them, treat them, And, you know, I've always said that, because people ask me, you know, this isn't a philosophical thing with me. If this is what a medical doctor says is an appropriate treatment for somebody, I want to make sure that that person has access to that.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald. Time has flown. I get time just for one more question, and that is looking ahead to 2023 and beyond. What are some of the things that you look to this coming year that you look to do to improve things even further in the jail or in the department? What's your vision for the next term ahead?
Well, the next 6 years is as we sit here now, it's a long time. In the political world, it's a long time. But time flies when you're having fun. So we're going to try and you take this one step at a time. We've just gotten the MOUD stuff is all brand new. We just received our DEA license to administer the methadone and things like that. So we're going to see how this works. And I still want to encourage or offer to those inmates coming in the opportunity to get sober and clean and get off of everything. And there are many that will avail themselves of that. But going forward, I'm looking forward to continuing and expanding those partnerships that we have with our local communities, in particular the city of Brockton. We've done, and the DA's office has teamed up with on all these. DA Cruz has been very, very supportive of our Corey-friendly job fairs. I think the best way to ensure that someone is not going to recidivate, not going to end up back in jail, is to give them an alternative. And, you know, it's an amazing thing. One of the things that we had looked at in the past, and COVID pulled the plug on us, was getting together with some of the laborers' unions and finding out how, you know, not every inmate will qualify, but a lot of these guys are going to be able to do some of that training that will qualify them to become apprentices. And God knows, you know, we really are at a loss for qualified tradespeople. You know, and when they realize I can make more as a plumber than I can as a drug dealer, I think that's eye-opening.
It is eye-opening. If folks want to find out more about what's going on at the Sheriff's Department, your website?
Our website is www.pcsdma.org. Now, what that is, PCSDMA, that's Plymouth County Sheriff's Department, MA, and .org.
Sheriff, as always, you know, there's never enough time when you come in. There's so much that we always can talk about. Love to have you back in probably in about 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Just to touch base and talk about more of the things that are going on in the Plymouth County Sheriff's Department.
Yeah, and you know, as the year progresses, we'll be able to give you some of those stats that that right now we can only speculate about. And I am hopeful that we're gonna get some data that'll be useful, not just for us, but for correctional facilities nationally. And I do think that during the next 2 years, we're going to see some movement afoot to utilize those skills of all the sheriff's offices to assist some of the Department of Corrections inmates who serve much lengthier sentences, having them either step down to us or maybe even serve their sentences with us to avail themselves of the great reentry programming and vocational programming that we offer.
He is Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald. He's been our guest for this first segment. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to speak with Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. He's the chair of the Hanson Select Board in just a few moments. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9. WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Don't miss the Just Steff Show every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. for fun guests and tips on living your best life every day. I'm bringing sexy back to Monday nights.
Tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are back here on Monday Night Talk. Hey, if you miss any of our shows or our segments, you always check out the podcast, Monday Night Talk on Podbean, or just go to the homepage of 95.9 WATD and check out the podcast session section of our website. So, joining us right now, she has been on this radio program before. She is the chairperson for the Hanson Select Board, Laura Fitzgerald Hemet. Madam Chair, how are you?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. How are things in the town of Hanson?
You know, things are going great, Kevin. Really, no complaints. We're chugging along on a number of different, initiatives. So, yeah, things are going well.
You know, this is right around the time that I know that the communities get their cherry sheets, and they start, looking at numbers. You start looking ahead to the new fiscal year. But then you also look at, what do I have for personnel? One of the top things I think that you and I were kind of going back and forth is some of the changes that have happened. Like, you've had some retirements as of late.
Yes, we have, and we're actually probably going to have a few that haven't been announced yet. It's just the nature of the beast with the tenure that we had with some of our employees. So, we've got our town administrator looking at hiring the right person for those vacancies, and I think our basic premise is that we want to take the time to find the right person, because just putting a warm body in a position has all kinds of unintended consequences up the road, and we want to avoid that with everything that we can. So
what was are some of the key retirements that you have seen already, and then that you're looking to possibly fill those positions?
Yeah, so the two that have been announced would be our town accountant, Todd Hassett, who did a wonderful job for us for a number of years and really, pulled off miracles on an annual basis for us. And we're going to miss him and his sage advice. And then our fire chief, Jerry Thompson, is going to be retiring. So those have both been announced publicly and by the individuals themselves, so I feel at liberty to disclose those. So, we're in the process of interviewing for both of those positions. And in terms of Mr. Hassett's position, we currently have an interim town accountant who's doing a great job, but looking to have somebody come in full time. And speaking to Todd when he left, one of the things that he had very strongly suggested is, although he worked for us part time and, as I said, pulled off miracles on an annual basis doing it, probably not a sustainable model going forward for whoever we hire to replace him. And he really suggested that we should have somebody who could be in the office, full time, just so that those organic conversations could happen with the accountant that need to happen, and it's not always a rush, or it's not a, trying to have the conversation on the fly because of availability. So we're working on that. And in terms of, Chief Thompson's replacement, we do have Robbie O'Brien, who's been with us for a number of years, has thrown his hat in the ring, and we're currently in discussions with Mr. O'Brien.
You talk about losing, Mr. Hassett stepping aside. Knowing that you're hiring a new person when it comes to finances, how key is it that it's happening at this point in time, especially if you're looking at putting together or updating your strategic plan for the town?
Clearly that position would have a role in it, but the things that we're really working on for the strategic plan are, I don't want to say cost neutral, but they're not, some of them are, I should say, retention and attraction of employees. So that isn't really something we necessarily need to, we of course are going to look at salaries as part of that, but, that isn't something that I would say would be, on the back of a town accountant. We're looking at better communication to our constituents and to one another and just in general. You know, lots of good work is being done in Hanson, but we very seldom are getting the word out about it. And that just shouldn't be the case. So we want to do a much better job of letting people know what's going on, who they can contact if they've got questions or problems. And we really want to see people getting more engaged. And we're going to judge our success on that by the number of people that are attending town meeting, the number of people that are voting, the number of people that are signing up to participate in committees, the number of people that attend select board meetings, you know, all of those types of things are not, you know, they're a bit of a litmus test. They're not, you know, it's not highly scientific, but we know that we need to move the needle on engagement, and so that's the communication. So, you know, recreation, creating recreational programs. Of course, there will be some cost, but we may be able to do a lot of that, you know, on a volunteer basis or a fee basis. And then the one that I do think will impact us and you know, is clearly going to require our town accountant to weigh in would be infrastructure, you know, highway building, you know, and all that, all of those capital improvement types of things. And then our economic development piece, which, again, there is a component that's the town accountant, but it's really we're actively looking for grants and working with businesses, and we can get more into that later. But, you know, so those are really like kind of the five tentacles of our strategic plan.
Where, what is the looming capital project that the town has to eventually invest in? Is it the highway department?
Yeah, it's the highway. I mean, the elephant in the room is I have not heard one person, there may be somebody out there, but I haven't heard anybody say, oh, those highway guys, we've got them in a great building and, you know, and we're all set. I think it's widely acknowledged that we need to do better for these guys. The building is literally coming apart at the seams, and it's quite old, and it's past its useful life. And so that I would say would be our biggest and, you know, most compelling need. Of course, you know, it comes down to funding, and the latest, we've got to exhume this project, but the latest estimates went anywhere from $5 million to $8 million, and it's not going to get any cheaper, you know, with the costs of building materials being so volatile. And, you know, and you've, of course, got the prevailing wage factor in there, too. So, you know, it's going to be a big-ticket item, and kicking it down the road does not make it any cheaper.
The McQuan School, where does that stand these days? I know that there's been discussion as to what to do with that property. Is it a good place maybe for a new senior center or library or maybe selling it outright? Are there still discussions on that?
Oh, there are still discussions on that, Kevin. So we've really, I feel very comfortable that we can say that we've explored every opportunity for reuse of that building. As you may recall, the reason that it was mothballed by the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District, and rightly so, was that it was not complying with ADA, fire code, there was some asbestos, you know, and all of that type of, you know, types of things. So it's just not a compliant building in general. And, you know, I think it galled people to think that we were just going to take it offline and that there wasn't any more life in the building. And we certainly tried to put it out to RFP to see if we could find any contractors that might be interested in making that into affordable housing for seniors. Really, we were focused on, you know, on over 55 housing, which we know that we have an absence of sufficient housing in Hanson for that demographic. And we just, people just were not interested. The economics weren't working out such that we could get anybody who was interested in it. We did think about reusing a portion of it for the senior center, again, because you've got asbestos and you've got all that material that needs to be mitigated. That didn't end up proving to be a fruitful exercise. So where we're at now is we had a bid several years back, probably like 2018, We had had some estimates to tear it down in the vicinity of $1 million, and we had gone to town meeting, and we had gotten approval, sort of hedged our bets that if, you know, if we didn't end up being able to get anybody who was interested in working on building it out, that we would end up having to tear it down. And we're having our town administrator, Lisa Green, go out one more time with Failing just to get a sanity check on the estimates that we got back in 2018, which quite likely are not going to be valid right now. We've got a sense it will be around that amount, but we don't have an accurate dollar amount. So she's had to do some further research on the amount of asbestos and that type of thing in the building, because the folks that are interested in bidding on tearing it down have been asking those types of questions and asking for more detail. And what we don't want is people taking a second bite at the apple, where we award a contract and then up the road they say, well, we didn't know you had that much asbestos, and so now we're going to charge you another, you know, X amount of money. So we want to be careful in the way that we issue the RFP. So Ms. Green is working on that very actively, and I believe that an RFP is going to be going out sometime in the next couple of weeks. Our hope is that we'll have that information back by town meeting, and if it turns out that it's going to be more than our original bid, then we'll go to town meeting for the difference between what was originally proposed and adopted and what the new amount would be.
Again, if you're just tuning in, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk. We are speaking with Laura Fitzgerald Kemet. She is the chairperson for the Hanson Select Board, and we're talking everything about the town of Hanson. One of the things that we bullet pointed was Main Street and the developments and the improvements. I want to say the other day I drove down and I noticed that there is some new construction that's going on. I saw some foundation work going on.
Yes,
what's
indeed.
Going on in that area?
Well, so we've got quite a few different things going on, but the most recent and active project right now is at the end of High Street and Main Street. That may be what you're referring to.
Yes.
And that is Stephen Egan from Whitman. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's a developer with a pretty good reputation in the surrounding towns. He applied to take down what formerly was the Teleconnectors building, and he also will be taking down the Victorian, which has caused some angst amongst folks because it is a beloved building. It is, you know, architecturally unique, but was beyond being salvageable to be used. And so he's left it up and made an offer that if people want to come in and take, you know, pieces from it, of course, going through him before you do that, you know, that they could do that. So he's been quite active in getting all of the site work done. He's got approval from the Zoning Board of Appeals, and it's going to be mixed-use commercial on the bottom and apartments on the top. I don't off the top of my head know exact. I want to say it's like 18, but I don't want to say for sure. It's two buildings. I think, you know, the Economic Development Committee, which I chair, is extremely excited about that movement because we've really identified Main Street pretty much from Elm Street to High Street is kind of the main area that we're focusing on for trying to get it cleaned up. It's a blight, and everybody that drives down there cringes a bit when they go through it. We know that it could be better. We know that it would make everybody feel better and that we've got an opportunity to improve economic opportunities down there. We have a lot of traffic go through that area, and there's absolutely no reason if we could make that area more attractive why we couldn't attract small businesses to locate there and bring in some much needed commercial or industrial revenue, because right now we're roughly 98% residential revenue. And not trying to change the town, you know, we're not going to make it into Brockton because it's not Brockton, it's
right.
Hanson. It would be nice to have, some additional commercial revenue and just to have some businesses down there, because that's important for a vital community to have that component. So we've got Mr. Egan moving on that. And then we've got next to Spiro's, we've got the gentleman who owns that who has has purchased the building, and he's in the process of putting in a convenience store, for lack of a better way of describing it, which I think is going to be quite attractive, because you've got on Phillips Street, you've got a apartment building that was put in. Then you're going to have Mr. Egan's project there. So right away, you're going to have additional foot traffic, and you've got a different economic climate than you've had in the last couple of years with some of these folks that are renting, you know, in that area. And then further up the road, we've got what people commonly refer to as the old liquor store, which is sort of a mint-colored, unfortunately, mint-colored building, and it's across from Dunkin' Donuts. Mm-hmm. That has been purchased and approved to have either three or four condos. So that will be moving, and our fire chief had asked that we tear down the garage that's owned by the town, and that's right next to the mint, you know, colored building. So as you can start to see, perhaps not the building that people would like to see progress on, but I think of it a bit as a sandwich, where on either side of the building that concerns folks, you know, we're seeing some positive movement, some money being invested. And again, we're not looking to change the town. We're not looking for the town to be a bunch of apartment buildings. But it does seem like that particular area, for folks that are going to invest money, the most appealing use is for them to try to find a way to add some apartments. And it is right next to the T, so it's, you know, it's pretty convenient for folks that might be commuting that way.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us. We're up against it, but I would love to have you back on maybe in 4 or 5 weeks.
And that sounds great, Kevin.
And probably by then, you'll probably be right in the meat of the budget. And we can discuss numbers, possibly.
Okay, that sounds great, Kevin. I appreciate it, and you take care.
You got it. There she is, Laura Fitzgerald Kemet, on the Hanson Select Board. She's the chair, joining us for a few moments. That does it for hour number one. We'll be back for hour number two in just a moment. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back. Later this hour, we speak with Chris Carney, owner of the Raynham Park. We'll talk a little bit about the transformation that's going to be happening down there. But right now, we're going to speak with Chris Heffernan. He is an at-large counselor in the town of Weymouth. Counselor, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you very much for having me on again, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
How are things in the great town of Weymouth?
Things are going well. We're heading into the beginning of this year strong. This is the first year since COVID that things actually feel fully normal, a full year of normalcy, and I think this is going to be a great year to be in the town of Weymouth.
What is the past 4 years? It's been a while since you've been here, almost 4 years, right?
I think it was August of 2019. I was here with then-Counselor Becky Haw.
Right, and then 6 months later, we get the onset of a pandemic.
It was interesting, especially from a local perspective, not knowing exactly what was going to happen on the federal and state level, not knowing how Congress was going to respond, not knowing what was going to happen budgetarily. It happened actually right in the middle of our budget season, not knowing exactly what was going to pass Congress and be coming down to us. Luckily, we have been able to recover Weymouth during that entire time. We did not lay off any employees. We did not make any cuts to our government at that time. We've seen in other states and other communities, even within this state, that found themselves in much far graver financial situations than the one we found ourselves in. We count ourselves very fortunate, and we're in a position in 2023, I think, to really succeed as a town and a community.
What would you say are some of the big things, or what are some of the newsmakers that are happening today in Weymouth? What are some of the big headlines, whether it's breaking news or just everyday news for those who live in Weymouth?
So I think some of the development projects that we're seeing, whether it be the new traffic configuration that's being done in Columbian Square, whether it be some of the development that's taking place in Jackson Square, and obviously Union Point has been with us as an issue for many years now. It predates my service on the council, it goes through three other mayoral administrations, and that's going to be something that's going to be on the front burner heading into 2023 and beyond.
We see another developer who is taking over the Naval Air Station. As a Weymouth resident, as an elected official, what are your thoughts?
I remain hopeful that we can make substantial progress. I want to see substantial progress for our community and for those who live there currently as well. To live in Union Point, it is not cheap to live there. It's not cheap to live in the state of Massachusetts, the South Shore and Weymouth right now. Real estate values are way up, and we want to make sure that this part of our community continues to flourish. I think with this new master developer, Brookfield, they have a standard that they have reached in other projects that they have done, whether it be in this state or other areas, that heartens me when I look at this situation. I drove through there actually earlier this afternoon, and to see some of the commercial real estate that is still the retail space that is just completely barren and abandoned at this time. I want to see that thriving. I want to see the opportunity for people to be there, participating in small businesses and work at making sure that we have a thriving economy there as well, and making sure that it's a place to be for the South Shore and Weymouth in particular.
This is a parcel of land that is shared by three communities. How is it zoned for Weymouth? I don't know if you know this or not. And has there been thoughts to change it because of the changes you've had to endure with a new developer, you know, taking over every so often?
So it's overseen by the SRA board currently. There are appointees that are appointed by Mayor Hedlund. He has appointed two of them, and surrounding towns as well. There was also a portion of that land up until earlier this year that was actually held by the General Services Administration of the federal government. That has since been bought, I believe, by the SRA board. So there's not only is there different levels of government, there's also Abington and Rockland that control certain parcels of that land. There is part of that project that is zoned residential. There's some homes actually that are going for $850,000 in that area.
Wow.
As well as some apartment buildings that have been built over the course of the last few years. But if you look to the other side of that project, heading towards Rockland and the Hingham side as well, there is a portion of that that has not been developed yet and hasn't been touched by development. There had been a few individual developers and individual companies that had had some interest in moving in there. They have not. And we need to keep the momentum going. We need to make sure there's positive news coming out of Union Point and Zellfield every chance that we get. We need to make sure that happens.
I think the thing I would ask you, knowing that we have such an issue with housing stock, mm-hmm. Is there a thought as to using this opportunity to have more residential and maybe more than just, you know, single family homes?
Well, the town of Weymouth has historically, in terms of commercial real estate, been lacking in that regard. We've wanted to have more and more commercial real estate.
Right.
As far as residents, we've continued to grow in leaps and bounds ever since, certainly, we could say 60 or 80 years ago since World War II. The people have been coming to Weymouth, growing their families, and purchasing homes here, and our population has grown since then. I think making sure that we have a full complement of commercial revenue and commercial resources would be to the benefit of the town of Weymouth, and that's where I see us going. I would love to see that happen, and I know that this master developer wants to incorporate residential and commercial. I'd like to see more commercial as well, just to make sure that the residents that have purchased their residencies within Union Point at this time are able to fully experience what they bought into at the time, which was somewhere where they could commute into Boston, where they could enjoy shops and restaurants and things of that nature. And from there, we can move on to build more as well and make sure that we have residencies for those who would like to live here.
One of the things that you and I highlighted was, and you touched upon it, I think, with the Columbian Square and Jack Square, the work that's being done. Do you feel that those are the key areas for when it comes to transportation issues that are being solved, or are there more around the South Shore that you'd like to see tackled?
So I think there's, as the population in the suburbs around Boston continues to grow and the demand for housing stock continues to grow, and especially housing near the near transit hubs as well. I think that we need to look not only at the traffic, which is a major concern. Columbian Square has been a concern for decades now, as well as making sure that we have have transit that can be reliable and affordable. We have three transit stops in the town of Weymouth that bisect the community. One's the Greenbush line that stops in East Weymouth and Weymouth Landing. We also have the South Weymouth Kingston Plymouth branch as well. The monthly pass cost on that particular on those particular lines is between $300 and $420, which is not very affordable, especially if you're already paying a high rent, a high mortgage payment per month. And I think that's something that the state government's going to have to look at down the line to make sure that if we're going to encourage communities to have housing around these transit hubs and these transit stations, that we make sure that the transit that people are getting on is affordable and reliable as well. We've all seen what happened, particularly with the Orange Line last year catching fire. Yep. And it seems nearly daily on the local news there's breaking news that there's not only a collision or an accident with a commuter rail train. I know here we are in Marshfield. Marshfield and Scituate are also served by the Greenbush line as well. So it's an issue that we're going to be facing, and it goes hand in hand. There's more cars on the road when we can't depend on our public transportation infrastructure, and we're in an interesting situation at that point.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Chris Heffernan. He is an at-large counselor in Weymouth. We're talking about everything Weymouth and beyond. Staying on the MBTA, mm-hmm. The commuter rail. We know that this is something that has been that previous administrations have tried to tackle, especially the outgoing Baker Polito and Deval Patrick Murray. Mm-hmm. Do you have faith that this new administration is going to be able to solve the problem that is the MBTA, and that is not only all of its mechanical woes and issues when it comes to operating on time, but also financially when it comes to the taxpayer's pocketbook?
I do. I think that this new administration, the Healy-Driscoll administration, enters office at a very interesting point. We find ourselves with a huge surplus as far as the state is concerned. And not only that, during the campaign, Governor Healy also made sure that this was a key component of what she campaigned on. I know that her lieutenant governor, Kim Driscoll, a former mayor of Salem, which is also a commuter rail community, has said that this is going to be something that they're going to focus on in this administration. I know that during the transition, they were taking a very deliberate approach to naming cabinet officials. They have recently named a new transportation secretary. I think she was actually sworn in this morning. And I think that making sure that we're taking an approach that what has happened in the past, the commuter rail stations that have been built in Weymouth were put in 1997. That was the South Weymouth station. And 2007, those were the two Greenbush stations. Boston and the Massachusetts economy has changed greatly since then. We're an international city. We're in a suburb right outside of an international city, right, with international city problems as well as international city transportation issues. And we need to wake up to that reality and work towards making a transportation system that is worthy of that international city reputation.
Do you feel that Weymouth is less, pretty much like a Quincy and a Braintree, that when the rents are skyrocketing in Boston, mm-hmm. the first place that folks will look is something that's close nearby, and that would be a Weymouth, a Braintree, and a Quincy? And how does that make you feel as an elected official, knowing that the folks are, you know, they're willing to, you know, commute into Boston, but mm-hmm. they're okay with living on the cusp of the South Shore?
I think that that's a trend that we're seeing not just in the South Shore, but throughout the state, sure. and also and nationally as well. I think that that's going to be something that the state's going to have to contend to across the United States of America. That's going to be something that happens, especially as you said, real estate prices are continuing to rise.
Yep.
I believe the Federal Reserve is actually going to increase the interest rate again tomorrow, and it has happened. And I think that that's going to be something we're going to contend with for a long time. And as I said in my last point, making sure that we have a transportation system that is efficient is at the height as should be at the front of the new governor's agenda as we move forward into 2023.
Segueing from talking about transportation, but talking a little bit about the future of economic development, what do you feel are going to be some of the key things moving into 2023 at a rapid pace? I opened the show by saying I can't believe we're already, it's almost February. We're going into the second month of the year. What are some of the key things when it comes to Weymouth and economic development?
I think looking at the Union Point development, that's going to be something we're going to focus on. It's something we've focused on. It predates my service to the town of Weymouth ever since the base actually was decommissioned in 1996. And I really want to get positive movement on the base going forward. The residents have seen enough of this. We want to move forward. We want to have a positive relationship with this developer, making sure that we're making concrete steps towards what we've been working for decades now, which is an integrated part of our community that has all the amenities that were promised those who have moved there already. And I think we can get there. I really do. I also think some of the traffic changes that we're making, whether it be in Columbian Square, whether it be in another part of town, our residents need that. We've grown in leaps and bounds. Like I've said, if you take a look at our population change over the last few years, compared to other communities, it's a mountainous change. And I think that we need to contend with that and make sure that we're growing in the way that we need to be to continue our own success, because over the last decade, Weymouth has had quite a lot of success integrating its economy into a 21st century economy, making sure that we're attracting people to live, work, and play here.
Any concerns? The past 6 to 8 months, the one thing that has been on is the R word, recession, right? Any concerns that you could see a financial backslide and it could be something that hurts? Again, we're a few months away from, sitting down and getting the mayor's budget and then deciding, do we look good here, or are we going to have to make cuts financially or when it comes to jobs? I mean, is there any concern? Is there any discussion with the council or with the mayor in regards to worrying about, funding and finances?
So the mayor has not submitted his budget to the town council as of yet. He will within the
it's
next.
Too early.
He will within a matter of weeks. Looking at the national and international trends that we're having, I read the other day in the New York Times that the economists are saying that all major economies, it looks like we're going to avoid a recession next year, with the exception of the United Kingdom, and that takes away a little bit of the anxiety. Although in 2007, people were saying that we might not hit a recession, and they did. We hit the Great Recession, and it took 8 years to recover from it. So on that side of the coin as well, I think the town of Weymouth has prepared for that, for any situation that we could meet in a fiscal sense. We have a robust free cash allotment as well. And we also have, in a different way, in 2007, we did not have the commercial revenue that we do now. We have been able to grow that commercial revenue. We have been able, with the addition not only of businesses that have flourished in Weymouth, but also we do have a meals tax within the town of Weymouth that has gone unnoticed by many who have visited the town of Weymouth, but has proven a revenue source that has helped us many times over. So I think that the town of Weymouth has learned from what happened in 2007. And it will help us in the future if we do meet a rainy day in economic terms as well.
I know a lot of our conversations has been a surface type of thing. We're talking about economic development and transportation and projects, but there's also the humanity side of it, and that is dealing with opioids and mental health crises. How is your community dealing with the opioid? Have there been issues in regards to drug overdose or folks who are experiencing mental health issues?
Yes. So I 2 weeks ago, as chair of the Weymouth Town Council Substance Abuse and Mental Health Committee, I had a hearing. We called the mayor's chief of staff, Ted Langell, as well as our substance abuse prevention coordinator, to begin a discussion just about what the administration's plans are. This administration has been very proactive on this, on these issues, whether it be substance abuse or mental health. And not only that, due to the former attorney general, now Governor Maura Healey, when she was Attorney General, reached a landmark lawsuit with Big Pharma, yeah. Johnson & Johnson in particular, that has actually given us funding so far in the form of about $250,000. Through 2038, the town of Weymouth should see about $1.2 million. There are state guidelines for how that money's being spent. That's what our meeting was about just a few weeks ago, to discuss exactly what we're going to do with this money, whether it be in programming, whether it be having an advisory council of some sort, a coalition. And I think a mixture of those things will occur. I know that this administration has been extremely proactive. The administration before this, the Kay administration, I know Mayor Kay personally would have residents come into her office and tell their stories, which was very important at the time. In 2007, you have to think of people were losing their jobs. The unemployment rate was in the double digits, and people just did not know where to turn. We're in a different situation today where we find ourselves after this pandemic really facing a coming of age on this issue where people are talking about mental health and substance abuse disorders more. And it's having a moment, not just in our state and in our area, but in the nation itself, where people are talking about it more easily. We're having meaningful conversations. And with issues like this, it's tough to know where to start, but we have to start somewhere. We have to start taking steps. I lost a very good friend of mine to mental health issues when he was 23 years old. 23 years old. Wow. He had his entire life ahead of him. And he is just one of many that have lost their life, not only to mental health, but to substance abuse disorder as well. If we can take one step in our community to make this happen, then it makes this taking the second step much easier. And thereon, we don't have to solve this problem in a day, but we do have to solve it someday. And if we don't, we see ourselves losing an entire generation of people that that we could have saved, that we easily could have done that too, by offering programming, by allocating money. That is the easiest thing we can do as a government, is show we care. And as long as I'm in the town of Wayne, this government, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to show that we care. We're going to show up, and we're going to be there.
Got a couple of minutes left with you, Chris. Anything that you want to make sure we touch upon before you at least say goodbye for now?
I think that we touched upon a lot, but it's an interesting time to be in government. I will say 2023, after the years, the four, we haven't seen each other actually in 4 years.
Yeah.
Just to see where we are with Governor Charlie Baker has left. We have a new governor, lieutenant governor. The fun part of being in town government is that you get to meet all the candidates as they come through. It was a really great opportunity to meet them. And to see what we're embarking on now, which is going to be, as we head into 2023, we have a surplus. Plus, we're able to do, as far as the state budget is concerned, we're going to be able to do quite a lot. And we're really fortunate to be where we are, as living in Massachusetts, to be at the concourse of everything and have the opportunity financially and intellectually to be able to move on into 2023. Thank you for having me.
You got it. If folks have heard this segment, if they want to reach out to you and they want to talk to you directly, how can they do that?
So I have a Facebook page, which is Councillor Chris Heffernan, and you can always email me through the town council website. Go on to the townofweymouth.com. I have a website right there. The link's right there.
Excellent. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me again, Kevin. Good
he
to see you.
He is Chris Heffernan. He is an at-large councillor in Weymouth, joining us, talking about everything Weymouth. We are going to step aside for a few moments. Final segment ahead. We're going to speak with Chris Carney in just a few moments. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hello, I'm Erin McGue, Executive Director of Fuller Craft Museum. Our mission is to excite your senses and help you discover the wonderful, accessible world of contemporary craft art. Our museum is open to the public 6 days a week and is free admission for everyone every day. We're located at 455 Oak Street in Brockton, right off of Route 24. Please visit our website at fullercraft.org.
Love is in the air at WATD, and we're here to help you get into the Valentine's Day spirit. Listen to 95.9 WATD all next week to play In the Name of Love. When you hear a short clip of a song and can guess the name of the woman or man in that song, be the correct caller and you will win a prize that is sure to make your Valentine's Day special. Listen to 95.9 WATD all next week for your chance to win In the Name of Love.
Name of Love.
Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9watd.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back. Final segment of Monday Night Talk. And whether you know it or not, sports betting is now legal in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It took a while to happen, but it's happened. Joining us right now, he is the owner of Raynham Park. He is Chris Carney. Chris, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
How are you today? How's everything going?
Everything is going pretty good. This is some exciting news when it comes to Raynham Park, knowing the history of Raynham Park. Let's start off with, tell folks a little bit about yourself.
So I'm 55 years of age, grew up in Brockton, Mass, worked at the dog track my whole life, been in the demo and trash business, most of it. And, everything's exciting in the sports betting side of the world. It became legal, July 31st of 2020 in Massachusetts. Now the first three casinos will go live with sports betting tomorrow at 10 a.m. I'm hoping to get a hearing scheduled for Raynham Park between now and middle of February and go live sometime in March with my own retail sports betting at the old facility in the Promenade, which we converted it over for about 3,500 square feet, getting ready to open up the new building at 60,000 square feet, probably sometime in June or July, looking to hire local people. And that's about it.
Chris, let's talk about the history of Raynham Park. Again, you talk about growing up and working at the park. I mean, what was it like back in the day for Raynham Park?
Oh, it was so much fun. It started in 1940. My father's been involved since he was a kid. His father was one of the originals himself. It was just so much fun. Raynham Park only ran 30 days a year when I was a kid, and then all of a sudden it grew into 365 days a year. We even ran Christmas Day night. And it was really a family-owned and operated business with that clientele for the customers and also the employees that worked there. I mean, I got people that have been working there for 50 years still. We had 1,200 people at our high. Now we have about 120 and probably going to go to around 300 or 400.
We should talk a little bit about, I mean, it was back in 2009 that it basically, due to a ballot question, halted your business. And most people, I think, most businessmen or women would have been like, oh no, what do I do? And probably got out from, you know, this park. What was it that was the driving factor that you and your dad, George, decided, you know what, we're going to still try to make something of this park?
So we still had 120 employees throughout from 2009 to right now. We still did over $22 million a year from then till now. It wasn't what it was in its high of $240 million. You know, back in the good old days in 1990. But you know what? It's so much enriched in our family in the blood. We just kept it going. And my father just wanted to see it through until we got something bigger and better. We tried for the slot parlor, didn't have any luck. Yep. We tried for the casino in Brockton, didn't have any luck. So I think if we didn't get sports betting, it was strike three, probably out.
So, but turning to simulcast betting, you know, how has that helped sustain until hopefully this new endeavor takes hold?
So we keep going with simulcast, and we have, fortunately, through the legislature for the last 12 years since we've been closed, and now we're going to turn it around and make it a really, really beautiful spot We spent over $3 million in TVs coming to the new facility, and we'll have horses going forward, and we'll have all sports betting at the new facility.
What you know, talk to me about the importance of sports betting and that legislation. I mean, was this something that you and your dad, that your family had been watching from its introduction in the legislature to its final passage?
Yes, we've been pushing for many, many years, you know, and hoped to see if we could get something, because we felt it was going to be a good tuck into us as far as our location and the demographics in the area. We've been working on it for many, many years. Fortunate enough, through the wisdom of the legislature, we hung in there long enough. They might have felt sorry for us because we got overturned in the legislature as far as the ballot question, or beat, I should say.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just something we've been working on, and we tried hard, and fortunate enough, it panned out in the long run. It was no easy run, I can tell you that much.
Right, right. How did it come to be that you're partnering with Caesar Entertainment?
So Dan Shapiro, that runs Caesar's Entertainment, went to BU, worked at Suffolk Downs as a intern in the marketing department, and then so Chip Tuttle put me in touch with him, and I went and met with Dan. I met with him at the Breeders' Cup, and we talked. I showed him the plans that we had coming for Raynham and the building we already had up and things that were moving forward. He liked it, knew the area, knew that we'd probably capture all the way from Quincy all the way down to the Cape and all the way out to Foxborough in our area, and it was millions of people. So he was excited. I just got back. Just got off the plane right now. I was in Cleveland all day. Last week, you know, with Caesars, and last week I was in Washington at their other sports book. So I've been seeing what their culture is like so we can meld and bring everything together all at once and hopefully move to the next level as soon as we open up.
What were some of the things that you've learned from your trip? What were some of the things that were eye-opening and maybe these could be wrinkles that we see in the new park?
So we talk about colors. You know, about what people like to come into a facility. We talk about seats, what everybody likes in the seats. We talk about, you know, how the experience is while you pull up, how it is for the bar, how it is for the kiosks, how it is for the tellers, how much you can take in a bet from a person, to the age coming into the door, to the food, to the lighting, to the carpets, to the tile, to the bathrooms. You know, so it's very involved. You know, Caesars has a great culture and a great background in the business. I mean, they have 165 locations throughout the country, you know, that they own or operate, which is really nice.
What is the process going to be like to be able to get the approval from the state to allow betting in Raynham Park? Sports betting.
So I'm hoping tomorrow morning that they have a meeting of the Gaming Commission to issue us a date that we can go have a hearing. And once the hearing is granted, I'll go in front of the commission with my legal team, marketing team, and Caesars team. We'll go in front of them. Caesars has already been licensed on the online side, so it should be a quick side for them because they've already provided all their background and all the financials that they're a stable and strong company. So then I'll go in front of them as being the little one, that the only independent in the whole business that's not with a big company, that isn't a big company, I should say. And hopefully we can push forward in the hearings, maybe 1 or 2 days. They're going to ask me whatever they haven't already asked me in my application, which was, I think, 300 and something pages. They'll probably ask me either in person or online. And hopefully we can move forward sometime in the middle of February and be open sometime early in March.
Now, will this only feature sports betting, or are you looking to expand? I mean, you're talking about a big footprint. What are some of the things that you'd like to bring, maybe in food or entertainment?
Okay, so food and entertainment. As far as the dog track, you'll walk into it. I said dog track, the new Raynham Park. It's 750 seats. You can sit down. You can go to reclining chairs. There's 48 reclining chairs. There's 4 VIP rooms anywhere between a 20-seater, a 40-seater, a 60-seater, and 100 seats. So you can have a private function there. You can have a birthday party there. You can have a graduation, whatever you want. As long as you're 21, you walk through the door, you're going to blow your mind as far as the TVs and everything that comes out. We're going to have a five-star dining room there where you can get anywhere from sushi to it's going to be an Italian steak restaurant. It's going to be my old restaurant menu at the Dart Track on steroids. We have hired an executive chef company that comes in and basically puts the chef with the whole complement behind the grill put together, and then they come out with recipes. I check out the recipes, and we see if the recipes are good enough for what we like. And then if the recipes are good, then we move forward. And if they aren't, we go back to the drawing board.
So it sounds like there's, you know, this will be the next level. If you are successful in being approved by the Gaming Commission, then it's on to the next phase, and that is building this. What's the cost? What is the cost incurred to build this facility?
This cost is over $26 million in the new facility. You know, so I mean, you're going to come in, and you're going to be like, wow. You're going to have everything from carpet to terrazzo floors to UBS cables in your chairs to waitress service with computers that come out. They take your drink order, their food order, and they have runners that follow it up. So you're not going to sit there long without food and drink in your hands or in front of you.
Now, is there only so many licenses that will be given out, or is there, what do you understand as far as the law itself?
There's only five licenses that are giving out. There's three casinos, which go live tomorrow at 10 a.m., and you'll see how much they're going to bet between now and the Super Bowl. And my great estimates are probably over $25 million they'll bet between now and then. And then there's two more licenses that are available. One, mine at Raynham Park, and two, Suffolk Downs, which hasn't chosen a location yet. So whenever they choose a location and a partner, then all of a sudden they'll get rolling. That will probably be many months from now to then, though.
Do you feel that it bodes well for you, knowing that there was so much, there's been so much news, especially with the tribal casino that was supposed to be built in Taunton, that's basically dead in the water, according to most, that this could be something that would be fantastic, especially seeing that you're going to have the South Coast Rail is going to be coming down and around that area.
I'm hoping the South Coast Rail comes. It's been 30 years since they've been talking about it. You know what? 21 to 45 is our demographics for this. It's right down the main street with this one right here. Everybody wants it. Everybody already does it. And everybody wants to go to it. So that's what we're going to make it. It's going to be on steroids. And you're going to come in. You're going to have, you can have pub food, you know, anything from a steak and cheese to a sirloin strip, to chicken tenders, chicken wings, to meatballs, to go over to the high-end restaurant. You're going to have two fish. You're going to have five meats. You're going to have three pastas. You're going to have five chicken dishes. You're going to have calamari. You're going to have clams casino. You're going to have clam chowder. You're going to have sushi. You're going to have a lot of different options when you come here.
What about now? I think I asked about entertainment. Would you have something like a Foxwoods, like a casino would have, and have, you know, musical acts come in? Is that possible, or not so much?
Sure. You know what? So the buildings can cut up in four different quadrants. So like if somebody wants to rent it out for a function, a fundraiser, whatever it is, we shut a quadrant down to whatever they need. If somebody wants to come in and say, hey, look, I want to reserve this area for the Super Bowl, they can do that. I have a 100-seat area that's called the Sports Den. You can go in and rent that out. You can have a live band in there. We might even have it on Friday and Saturday nights, depending on how the demographics work and what people want. So that's kind of what we're aiming towards. But nothing's off the table.
Now, would you have to, is there some kind of a agreement that you'd have to broker with the town of Raynham if, in fact, that this goes through? Or is it already something that's already been in the works with Raynham?
When you get approved for gaming, you're already grandfathered in. Okay. We were approved in 1940, so that's grandfathered in. As far as an entertainment license, I have one at the Dog Track now, and every license I have, I'm going to transfer over from one building to the other, whether it's food and beverage or liquor or entertainment. So I'm going to bring everything with me. I just want to make sure we get in the right level.
Now, is there a sport, this is exciting. I mean, is there a sport that you think that is going to probably do remarkably well with this new legislation, that you hope that people will want to come to your new location?
Well, we're projected to do over $65 million in the first year of sports betting at Raynham Park. I would say if we didn't do 100, I'd be shocked. I think football will be our biggest. You know, I just think that if we get open in June or July, you know, you only have really baseball and soccer between then and opening. And then once we hit September, we have college football and the NFL. I think at that point we'll hit our stride, and I think he'd be off to the races.
Wow. Not too bad for a Brockton guy, huh?
Not bad. You know what? Born and raised, loved it. Would have stayed there my whole life. Just one of those type of things. Raynham's been great for us, for the family. We've had the location there since 1940.
Sure.
Had the opportunity when we got the license. You could have moved in anywhere in Bristol County. Didn't even think twice. It was going to stay in Raynham because the town has been so great to us. And we just thought it was the greatest location in Bristol. And we look forward to move forward.
See, what was the reason why I asked you earlier in regards to how many of these licenses they would give out, my curiosity, knowing that I believe your family still owns the Brockton Fairgrounds, correct?
Yes. Yep, we still own and operate the Brockton Fairgrounds, yes.
It would be if they offered more, unless it'd be direct competition. It'd be kind of cool if maybe you could have something there. I know that was an area that was proposed for the casino back many years ago.
Yeah, you know what? It would probably be direct competition. And we're spending so much at the Raynham location, and it's such a great area. I think people will come to this area and support it so great that I don't think we need to open up another one, you know. And the licensing fee is $5 million. So not everybody's going to take a stab at it, for right. one. Two, you also have to get one, which would mean that legislature would have to go back in session
right.
and authorize another one, which I think it would be very difficult to do.
Are you hearing? What are you hearing as to other suitors who are trying to also vie for one of these other licenses, or is it just you right now?
Just me right now. You know, three casinos, myself and Suffolk. And like I say, Suffolk isn't up and running yet because they haven't got a partner. And whatever they do, they're going to be in Suffolk County. So it's no direct competition to me. Wherever they go, congratulations. And they'll have a great time, and things will be great.
Right. Chris, anything else that we haven't touched on or we haven't talked about in regards to the new Raynham Park Sportsbook?
I just want people in the area to come, you know, enjoy the new facility. I want people, locals, former employees have reached out about getting their old jobs back since the ballot question. And they'll be right in there, go right to the top of the line. You know, call the office, make an appointment, come in. Things might not get really, really rolling until probably May, maybe June. But we're coming. We're coming full force this time. And we're here to stay, which is fortunate.
Is there like a website where folks can kind of watch for updates?
Sure, raynhampark.com.
Excellent. There he is, Chris Carney, owner of Raynham Park. Chris, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Love to. Love listening. Thanks.
You got it.
Appreciate your time.
Okay.
All right. Have a great week. Thank you, Daniel.
You got it. So, interesting conversation. I kind of felt like we kind of, Larry, reached the end of that conversation. Maybe what we do is we'll open it up, the phone lines, to our audience, our listeners, your thoughts on the new sports betting. Larry, when was the last time you went to, have you ever been to the Raynham Dog Track? By habit, I call it the Dog Track. Have you ever been to Raynham Park? I've gone a few times, so I'm kind of interested as to what's going to happen with this, this latest development as to the Carneys looking to get one of those sports betting licenses, one of five.
No, I've never been there. I've been by. Isn't that where they did some tractor-trailer schooling in the parking lot for a while?
They did.
Yep.
They did. They would do it out in the parking lot. I'm not sure if they did that prior to the dog race. You know, the ballot question for the dog racing to go by the wayside, because that was interesting how that played out. And then ultimately, the thought was that the track was going to close down for good, and they were able to find a way to do the simulcast betting, you know, where the racing was happening. Another plot of land, it was, you know, another state, but yet you were able to still place bets in that particular parlor, which was interesting. I'm curious to see what ends up happening with this. I have not gone to Encore yet. I'd be curious to see how they would set that up when it comes to the sports betting. Do we become the new Las Vegas now? Will they ever expand that? Or, you know, and also knowing that they have a good chance of getting it, but there was a thought when the Carneys were trying to get a casino in Brockton. They also tried, I think they tried to get the slots at the dog track, at the Raynham Park, that they were not given, that he couldn't get the votes. So the thought is maybe this, because the tribal casino is not happening, that maybe the Massachusetts Gaming will reconsider.
You know, I think we've got enough.
Really. Do you really?
Yeah. There's one out in, Pittsfield? Plainfield?
Plain Ridge Casino.
You've got Encore, and you've got several in Connecticut, and you've got some in Rhode Island.
You feel saturated, huh?
And the local tribe tried to do one on Martha's Vineyard. And,
that's right.
And they have land in Mashpee, and I don't think that was going to work out for
that
them either.
That didn't work.
Yeah, they have land in somewhere in Martha's Vineyard, and they've got land in Mashpee, a good bit of land.
781-837-4900 if you want to join the conversation. What's your thoughts on sports betting? You think it's something that's going to, is it going to be a boon? You know, they thought that with marijuana, the adult recreational marijuana, that was going to be something that would bring in all kinds of money to the state of Massachusetts. And latest report says that it's kind of fallen off. It's not as, the growth isn't there at this particular time. Folks have had their enough of recreational drugs, you know. Curious as to what's going to happen when it comes to sports betting. We have a new administration. Let's see what happens in regards to, you know, we had Chris Heffernan in earlier talking about the new administration, and as an elected official, he's saying, well, not concerned with any issues with a recession. You know, state looks for new ways to generate revenue. I'm curious as what will happen with this new endeavor that we're seeing. You know, keep our eye on what happens with the Raynham Park. I thought it was interesting. I did want to ask him about the fair, but I didn't want to kind of cross my streams. Other than asking if they had expanded the licenses beyond five, if they would consider doing it, if they felt there would be direct competition. I also wanted to ask about the Brockton Fair, if they're ever going to bring that back, but...
I thought there was a Walmart going there.
No, I don't think so.
I thought that was what I had heard.
No, well, what they have right now, I think they have, like, Amazon trucks that park there. Like, dozens and dozens of them.
Well, maybe they'll be teaching them how to drive trucks there.
Although they used to...
How about mini car racing?
Sure. Well, they used to use that. They would have different events that... The thought was is that they're going to tear down the grandstand, so that would be the end of the fair, because that was the area that they would do all the demolition derby. Mm-hmm. You know, like over Marshall, they do the demolition derby. I don't know if they have a grandstand. Do they have a grandstand over at the Marshall Fair?
Yeah, it's older than we are.
Is it really?
I think it still has knob and tube wiring for the electrical lighting.
Does it?
Yeah, it's from like the 1800s or something. Yeah, it's still there. It's made out of wood. So, solid wood.
Yeah, so the thought is that they're gonna level the grandstands at the Brockton Fair.
I thought they had already. No?
I haven't been by there. Anybody has anything to the contrary?
It's usually dark, I think, when I get over there, if I have to go over to the Brockton High School.
Oh, to cover games?
The last time I was over there was actually to see a Brockton Rocks game. So maybe it was still there then. When I left there, it was dark. I wasn't driving, so I was in the third row of a vehicle.
The rumor was that they were going to sell the property, leveled at. Again, they made the attempt, you know, several years ago to
maybe to
get a Class C license in that area.
Yeah, maybe it'll be housing or something. I mean, it's hard. That's a hard area to get to sometimes.
You know, yeah, traffic.
There's no like direct highway in Brockton, access right. into that spot.
Biggest problem is people have complained when they talked about putting a casino at the fairgrounds was the traffic. I remember when they actually had the Warped Tour. They had the big rock concert and had multiple bands and how it tied up the Route 24 and the off ramps for
trying to get out of the Brockton. Several hours can be the same way too.
Several hours. Well, yeah. Not anymore. It's maybe back in 2005, 2006 when it was a relatively new family fun event to go to, but it's pales in comparison. I mean, the numbers aren't what they used to be.
I'd like to see on the South Shore somewhere a NASCAR type racetrack somewhere.
You mean like down to St. Kong?
Something not like that small. I want
Epping, New Hampshire.
I don't know. I want to see something that I don't have to drive to
Sundays.
New Hampshire.
Sorry,
the England Dragway. No, that just take Route 1 over to the Flying Harleys and all. The Natural Burning Harley. Yeah,
that's good.
I love those commercials.
Well, we will see what happens. And
I
again,
mean, most of the old dog park was out in Raynham, out on 44, which is where they did the car sales, the big auctions for a long time. There was a gigantic flea market there for years, and they had expanded it into the inside grandstand, which would have overlooked the racetrack there. And I remember my mother saying, "Your uncle used to come here a lot."
Wow.
And they had this great gigantic fire there. I think that's where they auction off all the cars now. Last time I was out there, it was almost into Rhode Island.
Well, just about out of time. We want to thank our guests this evening for joining us. Not only Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald, some of the information he shared with us in regards to being reelected. Realizing now he is the elder sheriff in the state. Laura Fitzgerald Kemet, a Hanson selectman, as well as Chris Heffernan, town councilor. Good conversation in regards to what's going on in Weymouth. And to wrap things up, Chris Carney. So, Larry, I want to thank you for being my final guest this evening. As we look to wrap up the show. Until next week at... Yes?
Oh, turn the mic on. By the way, I should know how to do this by now.
Yes, you should.
Try to stay warm this week. It's going to get colder as we get through this this week. -5 or something, I heard somewhere.
So you're saying that your show's going to be quite cold this weekend, this Saturday?
Well, I'm going to put a wood-burning stove in the studio or something. It'd be cheaper than the gas. It'd
be a sight to see.
It'd be cheaper than the gas supply that's coming into my house.
Well, until next week
at
6:15 p.m., I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll have more conversation then. Stay tuned.